Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Radio Show. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice, our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. Oh yes, because together we can do this. Well, welcome everybody, welcome. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is The Healthy Mind Podcast for August 8th, 2012, and I am so happy that you are here today. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. Wow, I've got a great show planned for you today. You know, I finished up last week's podcast, and for those of you who didn't hear it, that's okay. But last week's podcast, I finished up with the news talking about a new study that had to do with anxiety and depression, and really the incredible effects that even mild anxiety and depression can have on our body physically. So I'm going to review that a little bit, and I want to tie it in to a larger body of evidence that brings together really everything that I am trying to accomplish here on The Healthy Mind about the importance of keeping our emotional well-being at its optimum, at its very, very best. It isn't just about feeling good emotionally, psychologically, but I want to show you some of the evidence that shows that you really pay it forward on your body physically by keeping your mood in check. Okay, so we're going to talk about that, kind of a mind-body exploration today, the effect of stress on our physical well-being. It's Mind-Body Day on The Healthy Mind. So I'm glad that you're here. Some great news in the second half of the podcast. You're really going to want to stick around. We'll do some headlines, and hey, we've got ourselves an awesome podcast. So I'm really glad that you are here. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. And if you have any questions or comments, don't hesitate to email me, peter@thehealthymind.com. Okay, now, last week in health news, I talked about a brand new study that had come out. It was a European study that looked at the effect of anxiety and depression specifically as it had to do with physical illness. And really what this study looked at was life expectancy in general. And as I had said in describing the study and discussing the news a bit, it was a study that looked at about 70,000 individuals over about a 10-year period. And what they did was look at individuals, and first off, they wanted to know if they did have any anxiety or depression, and then controlling out for other reasons why they would get sick, they looked at the life expectancy of those individuals if they had anxiety and depression. And the results were, quite frankly, very sobering. If you had anxiety and depression, it was unequivocal. I mean, there was no question about it. Your life expectancy was lower. And really, when we look at other data that has come up, and I've brought that up over the past on The Healthy Mind, both in the podcast and articles that I have written on these particular studies, we know that the emotions will exact a toll, a cost, on our physical body. It isn't just about our emotional well-being and our psychological suffering, but the emotional state of our body affects the physical state of our body. Now, what was really ominous about this particular study, and you can read the entire article at The Healthy Mind, and the title of the article is Study: Even Mild Depression and Anxiety Can Kill You. Now, forgive me for the dramatic title, but I really think it's important because what these researchers found was exactly that. even individuals who had mild anxiety or mild depression showed an average decrease in their life expectancy. Think about that. Mild anxiety and mild depression could end up shortening your life. This is the essence of the mind-body connection, at least one of the more ominous examples of the mind-body connection. Now, I've talked about this, as I've said, on various podcasts, and really it is so, so important to continue to bring this up, because we must take care of our emotional well-being. There's just no other way around it. We must take care of our emotions because they directly impact our physical well-being. I've talked about it before in terms of the impact of depression and anxiety on major health issues facing our country: diabetes, hypertension, cardiovascular disease, even cancer. When you have ongoing anxiety, stress, depression, it makes those illnesses so much worse. This can only happen if there is a psychophysiologic relation, the relationship between the emotions and our physical. Now, those of you who have listened to The Healthy Mind for a long time know my specific area of interest is in the overlap between emotions and physical pain, chronic pain. And there, we know that there's a connection. That has been shown over and over and over. That one, the emotions make the pain worse, pain might make our emotions worse, and this cycle continues. So it is so important for us to get past the stigma of what it means to struggle with our emotions. And when I say to take care of ourselves emotionally, I'm not talking about going in and seeing a psychiatrist or a counselor or a therapist, although if you need that, do that. But stress, worry, insecurity, doubt, if those things are affecting your life, if they are dominating your life, you owe it to yourself, you owe it to those who love you and whom you love to address it and take care of it. It might mean taking more time for yourself to exercise, to reclaim a hobby that you've enjoyed, or spending more time with friends and family. It might mean going in and seeing somebody, talking to them, a therapist or a counselor. Or you may need to see someone like me, a psychiatrist, to get the treatment that you need. But really, the stigma and what we think emotional illness is and how we perceive what it means to struggle emotionally, a weakness, a character defect, there's no time for that. There certainly is no time for that in your life. Because look at it. Look at this latest study that has shown the impact of even mild anxiety and depression. It has the potential to shorten your life. Take the time to think about these things. It's time well worth it. If you are struggling with something, an obstacle, a habit you'd like to change perhaps, insecurity, worry, whatever it may be, take the time to analyze it. And if you can't figure out a way through, find someone who can help you. But they'll be helping you to tap into your own strength. You will do it. I see it every single day. People are so powerful. They truly are. You truly are. That is why the tagline of this show is "Never doubt how truly powerful you are." It's not a hook. It's not a fancy schmancy saying. It is the essence of our strength. And you have that within you. You can meet and get past the obstacles in your life. Because we all do, some way or another. It's doubt, my friends, and fear that holds us back. But those are just emotions. They are just emotions. And we can work those thoughts, and we can challenge them, and we can get past them. Sometimes we need help along the way. It might be a friend, it might be a family member, it might be a therapist, heck, it might be somebody like me. But people move past their doubts and fears. All they need is a little shred of belief in themselves, and things begin to change. So when we see something like the study I told you about on the impact of anxiety and depression on our life expectancy, for goodness sake, or earlier studies that I've talked about in terms of the impact of emotions and our psychological well-being on medical illnesses like hypertension or diabetes or even chronic pain, or another study about anxiety and how it can literally make you age faster. The mind-body connection, it's alive and well, my friends, and we must respect that. Because when we start feeling better emotionally, physically, we start to fall into line as well. So when people come to see me and they say, well, why should I be on this treatment? Why do I need to continue? Yes, I want you to feel better emotionally, but I'm also thinking long term in terms of what may be the best thing for you physically. The time for stigma is over. Because stigma, and I've said this before, stigma kills when we're talking about emotional well-being and the effect that it has on the physical. So please think about this. Don't doubt your strength. You can absolutely do it. You really can. We all can. And that, ladies and gentlemen, oh, that is a beautiful first step to take as we walk down our road to the healthy mind. And now, it's time for news. Okay, well, another very busy week of news, but this first study was absolutely fascinating. The headline, How a Nasal Spray Makes You a Better Judge of Character. Can you believe this? According to a new study, volunteers who inhaled a nasal spray containing the hormone oxytocin were better at detecting other people's emotion. Oxytocin. Now, I remember we've talked about this before on The Healthy Mind. I've got to go back onto the website. I know that there was a story, if I remember correctly, it was about oxytocin in nasal spray form. I believe it had something to do with shyness. It was a study that looked at those that had used a nasal form of oxytocin were able to be less shy. Well, what exactly is oxytocin? And oxytocin is a hormone that gets released in our body. And it's this, I guess, a touchy-feely kind of hormone that really allows us to really bond with other people, to trust other people, and even fall in love. It's been known as the bliss hormone or the love hormone. Well, in this particular study, it was done at the University of Oslo. The researchers wanted to see what, if any, effect oxytocin in nasal spray form would have on people's ability to judge others' emotion. So they brought in volunteers and they gave them the nasal sprays, and they either contained oxytocin or they were placebo. It was just salt water. And then what they had the volunteers do was look at pictures of faces that expressed all different types of emotions. There might have been some photos of angry people, others happy, and others that were more neutral expressions. And the results were fascinating. What they found was that oxytocin really intensified these volunteers' awareness of the emotions that were present in the photos. The faces that were angry, they stood out to those individuals as more angry and less happy. And those that were happier really stuck out as being happy. Now, they did the experiment twice to make sure that everyone who participated got both oxytocin and also the placebo, the salt water. And according to one of the lead researchers, Dr. Leknes, he stated, quote, "It turns out that those with the lowest aptitude for judging emotional expression properly, those who were the poorest scorers during the saltwater round, were actually the ones who showed the greatest improvement using oxytocin. This is really fascinating. The people who need it the most are the ones who get the most use out of this hormone." Now, what does this mean practically? A really interesting experiment. But there are implications. The researchers feel that hormones may be potentially a supplement that can be used for individuals that might be suffering from depression or other types of emotional illness. Again, from Dr. Leckny's, quote, oxytocin will not be a cure-all for mental illness or drug addiction, but it may be of use as a supplementary treatment. It may make individuals better equipped to interpret the signal of others around them, which may improve how they function in social settings. End of quotes. Oxytocin. If you have a chance, take a look around on thehealthymind.com, particularly with some of the earlier studies on oxytocin, a fascinating, fascinating hormone. But a nasal spray makes you a better judge of character. Okay, well, this next story, hey, we're going along the mind-body theme today. And I think you will appreciate this. The headline, telling fewer lies is linked to better health. Now, this was new research from Notre Dame. And what they found was that when people managed to decrease their level of lying, at least in this study, it was about a 10-week period, they reported significant improvements in their physical and emotional health during that period of time. Oh, this was fascinating. According to the lead author, Dr. Nita Kelly, quote, we found that participants could purposefully and dramatically reduce their everyday lies. And that in turn was associated with significantly improved health. End of quotes. Oh, amazing. This was about 110 people that were studied. And about half of them were instructed to stop telling lies, both major and minor lies, for the entire 10-week study. And the other half of them were the control group. They weren't getting any particular instructions on lying. And then they would come back weekly and they would measure both emotional and physical health. Interestingly, Dr. Kelly had said, the average American, how many lies do you think we tell per week? What do you think? Be honest. 11. Americans on average tell 11 lies per week. What they found was over the course of this study, the link between less lying and better health was significantly stronger for those in the no-lie group. For example, the participants in the no-lie group, when they told three fewer lies than they did in other weeks, they experienced, on average, four fewer mental health complaints. Now, this would be feeling tense or feeling sad. And they also noted about three fewer physical complaints, like sore throats and headaches. And in addition to that, they found that social relationships, interactions with each other, and the way that they studied were better the less lies we told. Amazing. Telling the truth or not, not only does it help us emotionally, but it has meaningful impact on our bodies physically. How about that? Lying and the effect that that has on our physical bodies. The mind-body relationship. Just amazing. Now, with the time that we have left, I just want to blast through the remainder of the news headlines in a segment that I like to call the Healthy Mind Headlines. Okay, the first headline. Boston University researchers identify a new gene linked to PTSD. Investigators at Boston University School of Medicine have identified a new gene linked to post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. The findings, published in the journal Molecular Psychiatry, indicate that a gene known to play a role in protecting brain cells from the damaging effects of stress may also be involved in the development of PTSD. The next headline, more education and socioeconomic benefits equals a longer life. Despite the advances in our healthcare and increases in life expectancy overall, Americans with less than a high school education have life expectancies similar to adults from the 1950s and the 1960s. And finally, listen up, parents. The headline, preschool children who can pay attention are more likely to finish college. Young children who are able to pay attention and persist on task have a 50% greater chance of completing college, according to the latest study from Oregon State University. Paying attention. Amazing. Get those kids focused as early as possible. College may be in the balance. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have done it again, you and I. We have made it to the end of yet another broadcast of The Healthy Mind. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. You can always follow me on Twitter as well. I'm at Dr. Zafiridis. And any questions you may have, comments, criticisms, I want to hear from you. The email address, as always, peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. And for the Healthy Mind podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Network, I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next time right here on The Healthy Mind.